afternoon and welcome to the Food Talk Show. My name is Margaret Scully and you are tuned to 103.2 Dublin City FM. Each week on this show, I talk to food producers, chefs, farmers and people passionate about food and drink. I hope you can stay tuned for the next 30 minutes. If you would like to contact the show, please phone 01 865 8020 or text 087 977 1032. Now, it's summertime and there's nothing like a cool, refreshing beer to quench the thirst. But which one? That is the question. The pubs and off-license of the city are now offering an extensive range of craft beers. And last week, I went along to a tasting which introduced me to a whole new world of hop swilling. My guest today is a rare breed himself and one of Ireland's seven beer sommeliers. Aidan Sweeney, welcome to Food Talk.
Thanks, Margaret. It's delighted to be here.
So, one of Ireland's seven beer sommeliers. First of all now, a beer sommelier.
Yeah, I mean, the issue for a beer sommelier is almost like a beer ambassador. And it's similar to sort of a wine sommelier as such. It's actually to work with people that would be customers or people unfamiliar with, say, different varieties of beer, in my case, and actually try and match them up with beers that would actually suit their taste, match it with food, and actually just generally introduce them to styles that they may not be familiar with.
Okay. And so in order to become a beer sommelier, take me down the road. How did it enter your head in the first place?
Well, I think it actually it came about by accident. My family know I'm passionate about beer and various things like this, and they quickly were running out of beer books to buy me for Christmas and birthdays.
Were you a home brew person?
I wasn't a home brewer, actually. It was more just through travel. I lived in London and Washington and Brussels over the years, and actually I used to be very much into beer and wine and got the variety of different drinks. And then I realized that when I was living on my own, actually having a bottle of wine, you know, every couple of days, just, you know, it didn't lead you to say that you have a glass or two and then the bottle look a bit lonely in the corner. So I quickly switched to beer and various things like that, particularly when I was in Brussels. But what it was with the beer course, it actually just grew from an introduction to how to taste beers and then actually into a certificate in actually beer and food matching. And it was just that the people clubbed in together and got me presents because they just shut me up at Christmas and various things of that. And then it just grew from that. And I actually just put a lot of work doing tastings and various things of that. And then earlier this year, and at the beginning of April, I qualified as the fourth beer sommelier at the time. And now we actually have seven, and it's great. And it's just a sign of just how much the interest and the professionalisation it's getting.
Yeah, absolutely. So where did you train?
I trained over in London. Now, you can do parts of the courses in Ireland up to the actual final Viva as such. And it was with the Beer Academy. And believe it or not, there is a place called the Beer Academy. And it's attached to the Institute of Brewing and Distilling. They never told me this when I was filling out my CAO form and everything like this. Because who knows, my future could have been a lot different at that time.
Okay, so there's a Beer Academy in Ireland.
A Beer Academy in London. But they run some courses through the Taste for Success skill nets and various things of that. So if you look at the beerireland.ie, that you can get some information about some of the courses that are coming up here.
And so what in the Beer Academy that is, and so is that training people to work in the brewing industry or to become brewers themselves? Or
no, the Beer Academy is more just an offshoot to train people in the actual appreciation of beer and the knowledge of beer and how to communicate it to the customers. Whereas the Institute of Brewing and Distilling is actually around different aspects of brewing, distilling, packaging, various different things of this, and actually the professionalization for working in those industries. Mm-hmm. This is very much actually at the customer base, or actually at those that are in the, you know, in journalism or various different things of this, or at the retail end, is actually how to really upskill it. And like, we've actually been, a lot further behind than, say, the wine industry and various things of this. And that's why when you go into menus and restaurants and various things of this, you see extensive wine lists and you don't see it with beer. And I can guess you what, I mean, if you were ever to do a show here, we can go pound for pound and actually show you that how beer can actually match food better than wines at times like that, because there's such varieties in beers that you mightn't necessarily play around with wine.
And tell me, good foods to match with beer. Give me a few examples.
Well, I mean, it really depends. I mean, cheese is the best example. I mean, you can actually use, you know, from your stinky, smelliest cheeses right down to your mild cheeses. there's such variety with the beers and various things of this. So you actually get beers, for instance, with your Stiltons and various things of that, a big, big, powerful barley wine, you know, could go with those sorts of wines. And you'd actually approach, when you're doing your beer and food matching, the similar sort of characteristics you do with wine, but you just have a bigger palate to play around with.
Okay. So basically, you would have studied then certain cheeses with certain beers and etc. like this, any particular dishes, you know, say, I don't know, steak and Guinness pie, or is it, you know, it's the relationships between...
It is, and it's similar to wine. It's such, some of the local stuff. So you take, you mentioned your steak and ale pie. I mean, you're talking about, like, you go into an English pub and you have a big pint of bitter that may be on cask. Some of those that actually have that would be complimentary, would have enough body that would match the actual pie in the dish.
Gosh,
similar,
you know,
to
where,
as
you know,
wine.
Where I'm heading now. I'm on Coronation Street.
Yeah, I mean, I
but you know, the whole story there, that was always like Betty's hot pot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's the very much the localism, and it's a similar sort of the wine. So if you ever, when in doubt, go local. But if you like, take for instance myself and my wife now, we'd have curries. Now, I like the spicier the better. She doesn't. How I can cheat is I can use a really hoppy beer that will actually, you know, will power up that actually curry better. And she can use a milder ale and actually will have two different effects in the same dish.
So what would you like, what would you drink with curry? Because I know traditionally in Indian restaurants they go a lot for Cobra and Kingfisher beer, mm-hmm. say, for example, they're two of the Indian brand beers.
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of different ones. I mean, I think to give you two different examples, for instance, Mahon Falls is a beer from Dungarvan, a big rye ale. Now, rye has got a little bit of dry spice to it. It actually perfectly picks up and matches some of the actual characteristics in a curry. Now, on the other hand, if you have a spicy curry, that I've actually Rogue out of Oregon, have a dead guy ale, and actually picks up characteristics almost like a Peshwari naan. It becomes quite sweet. So, you know, the way you actually have to think about it, the same sort of the ingredients, not only in the dish.
What's
and
it called? A dead guy what?
Dead guy ale.
A dead guy ale.
Yeah, I know it doesn't actually sound the most appetizing.
I'd
works.
Twice about ordering that. And that's from where? From
Rogue. They're actually out of Oregon.
Rogue in Oregon. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, but it really picks up. It becomes quite sweet. And it's picking up that sweetness and that malt there. And, you know, and that's what sometimes it's just, you trial by error. But guess what? Unlike, say, going to a restaurant with a bottle of wine or various things like this, beer can be a lot cheaper to do this. So you can actually play around with these sorts of things. Mm. Actually, and sometimes if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, you know. But sometimes, but it's the same sort of approach. You're looking, are you going to contrast or complement, and looking to balance the dish? How's the dish prepared and various things of that? And that's how you sort of, you know, this similar sort of effects. But the careful thing is you don't have one to overpower the other. And it's a similar sort of thing, like where we always think about a curry, for instance. You always use a Gewürztraminer and various things of this. And it's the same principle with beer.
Yeah. And so you would have been trained and you would have done a lot of this on your course, would you, in London?
Well, you would do it. But I mean, a lot of it is a lot of practical experience over the time. So you do the course and you do a couple of days in London and different aspects. But a lot of it, you actually have to prepare sort of a portfolio of evidence, and you prepare it and you cook with beer. You try different beers. It's a complete knowledge of the sort of end-to-end sort of spectrum.
Now, comparing London to here, what would you say the range of beers in Ireland that we can get in the craft beer end here and London? Would we have a lot less, or are we stocking a lot of beers here?
I think, believe it or not, I think the fact is that Ireland and London in particular are quite similar. I mean, Ireland and the rest of the UK may be different because, you know, you have had a lot of the different ales, or they would, you know, call them bitters and various things out over the years. But what you actually ended up having, that London was quite barren in terms of beer varieties for a number of years. I remember reading the thing a couple of years ago where when the Porterhouse, Bray's own Porterhouse at the time by Oliver Hughes and Liam Lahart, when they opened their one in Covent Garden, it was only the second specialist beer bar in the entire London area. Now, you look at how small Dublin is and look at how large London is, and that's actually, it's just remarkable. But now London's come on leaps and bounds. So London now actually in the last 10 years is up to about 60 breweries. Ireland across the country, you were looking at, say, 35, 40 breweries, and then the number of different brands are, you know, that are actually using other people's breweries to brew for them. So we're actually, it's almost like for like. But I mean, the rest of the UK, for instance, would have had their strong local brands and various things of that, that they would have actually had a very active campaign about. A lot of them would have been what we would have seen as real ale or cask ales. So the hand pump, people perceive them as being slightly warm, even though they're cellar temperature and various things of that. Whereas it just didn't become, London over became about lagers and various things of that. A lot of kegs, a lot of cool beers and various things of this, and out of bottles.
And would anyone drink real ale out of a hand pump from a cask here in Ireland?
Yeah, I think if you look at the fact is that Wetherspoons have just opened, come into Ireland, for instance, in Black Rock in the Three Tuntons Tavern, and they're planning to open 30 more. They actually have space for 12 cask pumps. They have four on at the moment, I think it is. And, they're coming on at 370, 375 a pint. You look around town, that some of the specialist beer bars will have a lot of cask. And the whole reason is cask is just seen as really it's just a different dispense method. So you can actually get two different beers. One that's coming out of a keg that may be pushed out with, carbonation and various things to that. Whereas others will actually just come out of, sort of a natural sort of flowing mechanism. And it could be two different beers. And people are doing it just to compare what one would actually, what style would work for them, for instance.
Yeah, no, because, I mean, I have lived and worked in bars in London many moons ago. And I just thought real ale, personally, I was like, oh my God, it's just so flat. And I personally wouldn't have a taste for it. But the other night when I went along to Probus when you were doing your beer tasting, that was very interesting. And I learnt quite a bit, obviously, a bit more educated now about the whole scene. And we were talking about IPA.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another one that always kind of escaped me. That's Indian Pale Ale.
Indian Pale Ale. And it's a style that just evolved. I mean, it's evolved from around the 1790s, for instance, with the East India Company operating in India. And they wanted actually a beer for their actually workers out there. And lo and behold, in Bowen, London, actually on the quays, there was a big brewery, and they actually ended up getting generous sort of terms to sort of pay once they return on the beers being exported. And they used a blend of different sort of aged beers to go out there, and they would go out in the cask with live yeast in it, and hops were discovered as a preservative. And that's where the sort of the overhopping of beers came from. And eventually, that whole sort of, as they progressed, the beer became sort of known as a hoppier, stronger beer than would traditionally be sold in England, but also that it became paler as they actually learned how to control the sort of the temperatures. They invented Coke, for instance, how they used to kiln the malt. So you used to get a very sort of pale malt and various things of that. That would give the sort of same sort of alcoholic sort of characteristics without the burnt notes and various things of that we would know from stout and porters and various things of that. And that style, once refrigeration happened in India, that style sort of died out. I mean, they could produce beers locally. Before then, you couldn't ferment in the temperatures out in India. So that was resurrected in the US in the late 70s. And instead of actually producing a beer that was used the hops to actually preserve on their 6-month voyages to India, at which point they go through a number of different sort of climatic conditions and the beer would sort of go, the yeast would still live and still start to be fermenting away and various things of this. And you can end up with a beer that may leave at 6% and arrive at 8.5% and various things of this. That in America, they actually had all these lovely hops that actually big, powerful, aromatic characteristics as well as bitter. And they used to just put them in at the end of the boil and various things like that, dry hopping straight into the barrels for no other reason but just to give it a lovely aroma and various things like that and some flavour. And that's the Americans really took over the IPAs. Now, if you were asked about craft beer, most people would actually just say it's IPA and the bitterer the better. And that's not necessarily true, because it's all about the different styles and individuality of local brewers. But, you know, IPA has become the style character, you know, synonymous with the actual craft beer movement.
And tell me a bit more about hops. We were talking about this the other night, where, you know, the importance of hops and the different types of hops and where hops is grown and how much hops is in the beer.
Yeah, I mean, hops are just, I mean, the hops, I mean, craft beer is known about, is known popular about the different types of hops. And basically, the idea is hops give a couple of things. Hops give you bitterness. They give you flavor. They can act as a preservative. So you can actually use stale hops to keep the yeast alive. And
so they're a grain?
No, hops are actually a flower. Okay. And they grow up to 8-10 feet in the air, higher. They're all natural. And the big area, what hops needs is consistent daylight and sort of regular, sort of predictable sort of weather and rain and various things of this. And sadly, Ireland has not, that the, you can grow them on small levels and various things of this, and but it's whether or not you can grow them on a commercial scale. And that's always been the problem for Ireland. Now, who knows with the global warming and various things of this, will Wexford, for instance, take over actually as a hop-growing region? But I mean, Coolin Loch Nan and White Gypsy down in Temple Moor is actually growing a variety of dwarf hops and various things of that. Sadly, the rains last year washed them away. But I mean, hopefully this year he's been more successful in terms of actually with the weather and various things of that. So it's consistent daylight throughout the year. So they grow certain parts of the equator. And most often or not, I mean, we would see is Germany is the big hop growing region of the world. You'd have some parts of the UK, anywhere from Kent right up. But the big new hops are all coming out of the American West Coast, Northwest. So anywhere from sort of Seattle and further north. And in similar sort of areas where the big sort of big powerful red grapes and various things that would grow from. In the wine industry, we're seeing a lot of hops in Australia and New Zealand, all in the same sort of areas that the sort of the grapes and various things that would come from.
Okay, so if they can grow grapes, they can possibly grow hops, would be.
And you can actually grow grapes, that hops that would actually be varieties that would be similar characteristics. For instance, I mean, you look at how powerful, you know, how popular Sauvignon Blanc and various things that would be in New Zealand, Sauvignon Blanc and various things that. They actually have Nelson Sauvin, which is a hop grown actually in the region of the New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc grapes, and actually mirrors the exact same characteristics of that grape. So you can actually find the beer. I guarantee people that say they don't like beer and various things that, you can find the beer that will actually, what people would like. Once you actually you bring out different characteristics and things like that.
Now, we've a wonderful range. As you said, we've possibly got 40 brewers here in Ireland at the moment, and we did try some of them the other night. Where do they all get their hops from? Do they source from different countries, from different places? Would that be quite specific to the taste of your beer?
Yeah, I mean, we would see, I mean, a lot of it, the difficulty that we have is that we're a very small country ourselves. And actually, the breweries themselves are quite small. So, I mean, large type would actually, they would source through the UK or various other sort of central buyers. But I mean, and there is a finite, like any sort of commodity, you know, agricultural product, there's only, it's susceptible to the amount grown, the fluctuation in prices and various things like that. But I mean, a large part of it would be on the US hops, for instance, at the moment. So Cascade, Centennial, Citra, you name it like this, and Citra is the name, will just, you know, give you that characteristic of citrus. And the big thing was with those are there's only a finite number of those available, and they have to compete for those. We had see 8 degrees, for instance, out of Mitchelstown, and we tried that last week, for instance. Scott and Cam, for instance, are very proud of their Antipodean roots, so they would actually use a lot of sort of Australian hops in their beers and various things like that. So they specifically go out and try and buy, say, the Australian hop Ella or Vic Secret and various things like that. So it can vary. I mean, they what you would have is that you would actually start out and actually say, well, what type of beer that I want to do? You'll work out, do I want it bitter or sweet? And that will determine sort of the level of hops and the sort of the barley that they'd want for it, as well as what are the flavors and the aroma characteristics and various things of that. And then you'll determine the right level of mix and various things of that.
And so we were just talking about 8 degrees there. Mm-hmm. So that is Scott and
Cam.
Okay, and so this is another aspect of the whole brewery, craft brewery and the small breweries that are, you know, around the country, is the people and the characters behind them. Tell me, what's a little bit about their story, Scott and Cam?
Scott and Cam are brilliant. I mean, they're an Australian and a Kiwi, and you would, on paper, you'd think they wouldn't get on, but they do.
Are they two men or two?
Two men.
Two men.
And they both married Irish women.
Okay.
And they studied brewing in Germany. One was an accountant. I don't know what the other would do. I know this sounds really bad. I think Cam was an accountant. And basically, they ended up setting up a brewery down in Mitchelstown in around 2008, 2009. Settles in Ireland. And have now become sort of the 8 degrees came from the, sort of the line of longitude. And they've started brewing some beers out there, and this year they actually won a medal at the World Beer Awards for their for one of their beers, which was just phenomenal business, you know. To see a small brewery from Ireland actually competing against the world's best.
And they're making a name for themselves internationally, obviously.
Well, not just that. I mean, they're actually helping. They brewed, they bought a kit from O'Hara's, as O'Hara's are expanding out of Carlow. And basically, they've now been supporting a number of other Irish breweries getting up and running. So that they're really, you know, integral to that sort of movement.
They're real forerunners here on the movement here in Ireland, are they?
Oh, yeah. And beyond that, I mean, you're seeing that you're having cousins. I mean, it started off with the Porterhouse, Oliver and Liam. But, I mean, you ended up with the situation that you have had friends. You've had a number of husband and wives. There's a number of female brewers that are actually leading their breweries. I mean, it's phenomenal stories.
Which ones are female breweries?
Metal Man out of
Waterford.
Out of Waterford. So the Gronje and Tim there, but Gronje is one of the driving forces there. And then you'd have Sarah Rorty out of N17, who's a fellow beer sommelier. She's setting up a brewery out of Tuam. And then you'd have Cahill and Emma out of Rascals, which is one of the newest breweries to start up this year. And they're setting up down in Rathcoole.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's growing. And one of the things is to, like for yourselves, and I'm sure it's no surprise to your show and various things like that. I mean, the number of small food producers and various things like that have started over the last number of years. And it's just, part of it is there is a global movement and the global support around small, local. But it's also the fact is what's great for Ireland is we don't produce enough of young entrepreneurs and various things like that. And this is where it's starting. And the recession, sadly, has helped this in a way. And one of the legacies from it would be that. It's the same with Dungarvan and various things of that. I mean, they both lost their jobs and then suddenly that they've now got a thriving business.
Yeah, it's a great story, isn't it? And another one we were talking about, and I see we have a bottle here of Red Mist Curiosity Red Ale, which I think that was the one that I said it looks like red lemonade.
Yeah, no, I think red ale and various things that it's a style, For real sort of beer anoraks, they'll debate the long ins and outs of this beer style, whether or not it's an original style and various things of this, and when did Kilkenny producing Smithwick's become that sort of bright red sort of ale, similar to red lemonade and various things of this. Hey, we're Irish, we like red stuff. And this is actually from Niall and Kev, and this is how I like the fact is that you actually get to know the brewers by name and various things of this.
Who are Niall and Kev?
Niall and Kev are two friends that I think they met in one of the banks years ago, and one's gone off to actually help set up and really drive this business. The other's keeping the day job to get some capital back into it. And they're hoping by the end of the year to set up full production in their own brewery in Dublin. And they only launched late in November last year. You may see Boom and various things of this, which was sort of a hoppy pale ale. At the time, it was produced over in England. Now they're producing it in Ireland, but under contract, for instance, with another brewery, until they get set up and they're building sort of a market. And they're distributing themselves around Dublin and various things of this. Kev's a neighbour of mine, so I have to be careful what I would say about it. But I would think what's great about the different things is I did a beer tasting earlier this year, a charity beer tasting down in Galway, down in Uthorard, and I brought Boom along with me, and people just loved it.
What's Boom?
Boom was a pale ale that actually just had a nice little hop bite to it and a little bit of
from Red Mist
citrus
as well.
From Stone Barrel. And
sorry,
Red Mist is their new red ale that's just been launched.
Okay.
And as you said, it's that unlike the Irish red ale that would have a nice little, a subtle bit of sweetness to it, this has a lot of dryness to it and actually a lot of bitterness at the end. And one of the things is, this is where we were saying, is that with beer tasting, unlike wine tasting, which is personally why I like it a little bit more than the, I've done both, and why I prefer beer tasting, is you have to drink the beers at times. You have to get that aftertaste, and this will actually show you that there's a little bit of bitterness that will come through at the end.
Yeah, that's that was one of the highlights actually of the beer tasting, was that we got to taste it all, Aidan. Now we're actually going to be running out of time in a minute, but just for our listeners, beer tasting, you hold up the glass, you give it a good swirl around.
Well, you hold up the glass to have a look at it, to look at the colour, because sometimes dark beers might be light, light beers might be heavy. And then you actually will look at the head, get your nose into the glass, don't drink it out of a bottle or a can, put it in because you want to smell it. And then actually you drink it back, and then you actually will draw oxygen back over the beer, and if it's bitter at the end and various things like this. But the great thing is there's a number of beers, go out and try them.
Brilliant. Well, we'll do that. And if we want to try them with you, Aidan, it is possible to do that sometimes, isn't it?
I do it every Thursday at 6:30 in Probus Wines, which is off Fenian Street and Denzil Lane.
Yeah.
Or else if you check out brewsinternational.com, you can find my website and you can leave me a message anytime.
brewsinternational.com.
Yes.
And you can be contacted there.
Yes, I can.
And so basically, that's all we have time for today on Food Talk. So thank you so much to my guest, Aidan Sweeney.
Well, thank you, Margaret.
Thank you for coming in. Do stay tuned to 103.2 Dublin City FM, because coming up next is a show called After, and it's a show that talks about death with Valerie Vetter. I'm Margaret Scully, and Food Talk will be back next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Until then, have a great week.